Well, we have one more case to help illustrate today's topic. Keith from Cedar Lake, Indiana, is one of Dr. Kuzel's patients. When his cancer progressed on sunitinib, a clinical trial was the next step.
I tell my students all the time that my own first science experience as a child was collecting rocks and minerals. I just finished my 17th year at Wilbur Wright Middle School. That's the only place I've taught. I really enjoy interacting with the kids.
Okay, that's what a positive Benedict's sugar test looks like. Well done. All right, on to your other ones.
Sounds good.
In the summer of 2006, I felt some nagging pain in the outer left knee area. I didn't think anything of it. I kind of lived with that for a couple of weeks. School started, but I was scheduled to see my doctor for a follow-up. So he x-rayed and took a shot of my knees. He pointed out to me kind of a dark shadow that was just above the left knee area on the femur. He left the exam room for 10 minutes, and he came back and said, I've got you an appointment with a fellow that I interned with, and we scheduled a biopsy for less than a week later. And when my doctor announced, you know, we were talking about malignant renal cell carcinoma, only gradually did that kind of sink in. They wanted to do the small triple incision, the laparoscopic procedure. Couldn't do it. The kidney tumor had burst through the kidney capsule and was starting to intrude on the intestinal area. And then the leg guy took over. He cleaned out that femoral tumor, put bone cement in its place, and then inserted a stainless steel rod the length of that femur. My other scans indicated, I had a lung tumor. I had a tumor on the second lumbar vertebra and a couple spots in the ribs. It has spread, and that put me into the incurable category. And so now we need to seek treatments to manage the tumors. Another doctor suggested that I try kind of a newer therapy, which was a drug. It was just a pill I could take. I could do it at home, one pill a day. And from what we could tell on things like x-rays, it looked like maybe those tumors were being managed somewhat as well. But it was the lung ones that kind of showed up again in the summer of 2007 that told us that we've kind of run out of luck with this particular treatment. It worked for about 6 to 8 months. I was kind of shocked back into this, not doing so well kind of state. And at this point, he suggested the name of Dr. Kuzel at Northwestern University that was running a clinical trial with respect to kidney cancer, and maybe I would be a candidate.
Now, I saw for his attempting a clinical trial and was glad it was offered. You don't say no if someone's trying to help you with metastatic cancer.
The protocol for the clinical trial involved getting an infusion of a particular drug before or during the actual interleukin-2 infusions, and I got the infusions beforehand. My understanding is it didn't work in a high percentage of cases. When it does work, it gives you a great deal of control. So I was kind of, looking for a home run, if you will. There were some specific side effects associated with the actual interleukin-2 infusions. Uncontrollable shaking, as if you were freezing. And that was real bad. But, it would only last a half hour. And so we kind of had a system where I would call for the nurse, and they would give me some relief, some drugs they could put right in my IV line that would calm that down. It affected my work quite a bit. I had met my students and spent about a week and a half with them before leaving for about 5 weeks, and that was difficult. Maybe mid-November, I saw the doctor again. He said, yeah, I think I want to hit you again with this. We seem to be having some good results. I missed another 5 weeks of school, but again, there seemed to be some decent results, and that made it, in a sense, easier. In my last round of images, we found those scans to be as good, if not maybe even a little better, as my late winter scans. Dr. Kuzel has not said at all that, we're going to get you again on this interleukin-2, at least not yet.
I started a little early.
It's still kind of a rocky flight, isn't it?
Yeah. I've been doing very well since then, honestly. And, you know, everyone that asks me, how are you feeling? How are you doing? I have to tell them, you know, I feel really good. I'm kind of running as much a normal life as I can at this point. I'm looking forward to the start of the new school year and spending, you know, 99% of that school year in front of my students. I think I'm making out okay with that.
Nice straight line.
Interleukin 2 has been mentioned several times now today. IL-2 has not been formally studied in patients who have failed prior treatment with one of our new agents. Therefore, it's my preference to treat such patients in the context of a clinical trial. And Keith was lucky enough to participate in one of those clinical trials.
Can you offer any guidance on enrolling patients in clinical trials?
Well, we need his mother to really get out there and tell everyone to go into clinical trials. So I think she is a true advocate. People who participate in clinical trials are true heroes. Every one of these drugs that have been through this process are part of that initiation of discussion with the patient, telling them that right now I have a decision to make. I don't know what the right therapy is, the best therapy is. And patients look at us and like, well, why don't you know? Well, in many cases, like kidney cancer up to 3 years ago, we had really no therapies. So I think it's ripe for clinical studies. And now, as we've mentioned already, there's a number of areas that, based on these new drugs, we have a lot of future directions to go forward with.
I think it's safe to say that Keith felt confident about being part of the trial, partly because Dr. Kuzel was careful to answer all his questions.
My biggest worry was that there was some risk of kidney failure. Now, I only have one kidney right now. So I discussed this specifically with Dr. Kuzel, and he said, you know, he had never seen it happen. And he wasn't particularly concerned about that, and that made me feel a lot better.
When we do clinical trials in patients, there is a form we give them called an informed consent. This tends to be a rather legal-like document nowadays. But I think it's also a process. And with Keith, we gave him that legal document, but he also came back with many questions and concerns, and we spent a long time discussing what other options might exist and what the possible risks and benefits were to the various therapies.
Well, gentlemen, most of our discussion thus far has been on clear cell renal carcinoma, but what do clinicians need to know about treating other types of kidney cancer?
Well, that 20% of patients or so who have non-clear cell histologies with metastatic disease unfortunately don't have nearly the proven drugs that we have to treat clear cell kidney cancer. The guidelines have laid out a number of reasonable options for patients based on small experiential studies, mostly. A clinical trial for this group of patients is clearly preferred because of the lack of data to date. That said, for patients with non-clear cell histology, with multiple risk factors who fall into that poor prognosis group, the temsirolimus database did show that there was also a consistent benefit for those patients. So I think that's a fairly easy recommendation. In terms of the other patients, however, in my practice, I will consider aggressive surgical management as well as rotating the use of sunitinib, sorafenib, or temsirolimus. Your experience, Dr. Carducci?
Yeah, I think, you know, the papillary renal cell carcinomas we learned over time really don't respond to immunotherapy. So we really are left with these new agents. The labels from the FDA for temsirolimus, sunitinib, sorafenib are all for advanced renal cell carcinoma and doesn't separate it out for the subtypes. So we just have limited data, but I think that's what we use, we try, and really need to encourage patients to go on clinical trials. And the only other group that's out there that we start to think a little bit differently about is patients who have sarcomatoid features. So that's really a special population that really has very aggressive, but you can have papillary that's got sarcomatoid features, you can have clear cell with sarcomatoid features, and those patients often have a very aggressive pattern. So times we'll even think about chemotherapy in that group of patients.
We've covered a great deal of information today. We've addressed advances in kidney cancer treatment, including surgical options, targeted therapy, and the importance of clinical trials. Doctors, how would you summarize the issues we've addressed today?
Well, I think we live in a great time for kidney cancer, and these advances we've talked about for the past hour have really brought home that point. I think from a surgical standpoint, it's a good time to be a surgeon. We have many options to offer patients with the advent of lots of advanced cross-sectional imaging and the increase of incidentally diagnosed tumors. We can offer laparoscopic and minimally invasive approaches, and that greatly benefits the patient's overall recovery time, pain, and return to quality of life.
You know, as scientists, Rhea, there's always a question about the value of working in laboratories and studying the basic biology. But this is a great example of how advances in the understanding of that molecular biology of these tumors has actually led to the direct development of a number of novel targeted agents for this disease. We've managed now to develop the agents, test them, and actually we finally have demonstrated significant improvements in progression-free and overall survival with many of these new agents. And it really is a better time, certainly, to be a kidney cancer doctor. The discussions are much easier and, I think, much more pleasant.
Yeah, it's a better time to be a kidney cancer patient as well. If that occurs, I think we have better treatments for patients with kidney cancer. It's dynamic. It's changing. We're learning more every day. And with that, I think it really puts both an onus on the patient and the physicians to really look at how do we do this better, that we've made some improvements. We're not satisfied. We got to keep working on this. And so clinical trials really is that approach.
Well, much of our discussion today has been based on the kidney cancer guidelines from the National Comprehensive Cancer Network. And you can find the guidelines online at www.nccn.org. You'll also find a link to that site at discoveryhealthcme.com. In closing, I'd like to thank all of you for participating in this truly important discussion about kidney cancer treatment. I'd also like to thank you, our viewers, and hope the discussion today will be helpful in advising your patients and making the best treatment decisions. Also, I encourage each of you to go to your computer and log on to discoveryhealthcme.com and take the post-test. It only takes a few minutes to earn free credit for this program. If you'd like to see the program again, you can watch it online, download a podcast, or order a DVD. All the graphics and references from the program are also available online. Finally, I'd like to thank the National Comprehensive Cancer Network for accrediting and for collaborating with Discovery Health on the content of this program, as well as our supporters, Wyeth, Pfizer, and Novartis Oncology. Once again, you can download the NCCN guidelines at nccn.org. Until next time, I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Health CME.